And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I got to tell you, it's exciting. Here we are. 2019 is upon us. It's just unbelievable. I swear I was just 17 not too long ago. That was a good year, too, by the way. Of course, that was also 1977. Yes, it was the previous century. I always wondered what it would be like to transition a century, and now I know, and it's not much different than transitioning one year after another. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., streaming live at those times at richarddugan.com. The podcasts are available at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page, as well as SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher. We're working on TuneIn, Spotify, and several others just to sort of expand our purview, if you will. And so we also encourage you to go to our guest website. We'll be giving you that address shortly so that you can continue, as I say, your evolution, the process that we are in. And also, if you'd like to support this radio broadcast, we are greatly appreciative of all support. We do have a PayPal link on our homepage, as well as our missions page. If this is the first program you've ever listened to, I would suggest going to our missions page after listening to the interview and reading what we're all about. We try to tell you as we're doing the program what we're all about. We're about looking for those new ways of living. We're looking for those choices and the knowledge thereof to help you, giving you new information that will help you in becoming a better person. That's what I'm working on. Some days it's easier than others, but some of the experiences that I've had over the last few months, just unbelievable. Well, today is unbelievable too, because we're going to be talking about some very interesting things like, who are we? Who are we? And we're going to talk with our guest, who is the author of his latest work is called The Unfinished Book. I don't know why we're talking about an unfinished book. Usually we wait until the book is finished, but it's the title, The Unfinished Book, about who we are, First Steps to Self-Discovery. Joseph Raines, our guest. This is Book One. And Joseph, thanks so much for joining us.
Richard, it's a real pleasure to be here with you.
And where are you Skyping us from?
I was supposed to be in London, but I actually took a short trip, but a two-hour flight down to a little place called Slovenia. You probably know Slovenia because a beautiful Slovenian girl is married to your president.
I've heard of the place. Yes, absolutely. Yes. Well,
and I have to tell you, Slovenia is, it's literally what you would call an American dream.
Really?
It's just amazing, honestly. Yes.
That's good to hear. I've always been concerned about this whole concept of exporting democracy, because we're always exporting it to places that really, yeah, they say they want it, but there are powers that be that say, no, we don't really want this. But anyway, that's another story for another time. Now, interesting, the title of your book, The Unfinished Book, about who we are, it raises that one question that I raised to one of my guests some months ago that I've actually brought up a number of times since then, and I'll put it to you. The question that I said to this guest, the question I put to them was, So in our evolutionary process, do you think we'll reach that point where we'll finally understand who we are? And they said, no. They said, what we will do is we will evolve to the point where we will understand who we have always been. So my question to you isn't that. My question to you is, who are we?
Fantastic. Straight to the point. This is going to be fun. Look, I've spent now some 36 years deliberating who we are. So sure, I have some fantastic answers. I have to say that, like, you know, in my many conversations with people, I did find out, however, that, you know, if I just give like some, because after 35 years, you come to some very simple answers, but just giving simple answers without explaining it, you know, it leaves people wondering. Because, I mean, inevitably to answer who we are, what we're actually doing is we have to go back and tackle what I believe is the ultimate dilemma, and that is, why is there something rather than nothing? And I mean, that comes as close to, you know, investigating the absolute, or, you know, some people call it God or the creator. But let me give you a very simple, my favorite. It's a two-word definition. And so who are we? We are the infinite potential. And my longer version of that would be, we are the infinite potential for creation. And obviously now, you know, unless I go into a long explanation, it probably won't mean much. But it really goes back to, as I said, investigating, you know, why is there something rather than nothing? And maybe just to start this conversation, let's start with an easier definition. And that is, who is the self? And the self, by all consensus, is simply, the self is a flow of awareness. And obviously, then maybe I'll pass it back to you now, because I have a lot of different definitions and we can use any of them as a point of our, you know, entry into our conversation.
Well, now the intellectual mind kicks in and says, and where does who we really are, where does that reside in the physical body?
Yes, for the purpose of investigating who we are, I necessarily had to segment who we are into various parts. Now, my favorite way of segmenting this is saying we are the physical, the body, we are the emotional, the emotions and feelings, we are the intellectual, which is the mind, the intellectual self, and we are the so-called metaphysical, which, you know, we like to call the spiritual or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. Now, this raises all sorts of fantastic questions because, you know, if you just look at our education, it's pretty much all about the mind. You know, we send children to school and we fill them up with a lot of data. And, you know, we talk about consciousness and we talk about meditation and everybody talks about the mind. But, you know, here's a challenge, you know. Think of anything you want. And I challenge you, you cannot think of anything without feeling about it also, you know. Oh, okay. I mean, unless you're Vladimir Putin.
Well, there is one other guy I would mention, but we won't go there.
Ah, yes, yes. Okay, we won't go there because he's married to a nice girl.
That's right.
So, and it's really amazing, Richard, because this raises so many fundamental questions. And, you know, I was in a way lucky because at age 15, you know, I had this beautiful childhood and suddenly overnight I came down with this incurable, what the doctors told me, illness. And they just basically pulled me aside. It was very, very painful, literally like somebody, you know, spilling boiling water over you. And they said, listen, there is no cure, but it will get better as you get older because you will learn to control your mind. So they said, listen, you should basically, you know, there was no internet back in 1982. Just go to the library and start learning about the power of the mind, you know. And I was like, what? You know, I thought you grown-ups had answers to everything. What's going on? And there was at age 15 reading books about the power of the mind. And very quickly I found out it wasn't the mind. It was my emotions. You know, literally everything we sense, think, say, and do, there is the emotional process going on in our body. And this just launched me on an amazing journey, you know, investigating how our mind connects to our emotions, how they manifest in our body, and how the three, the mind, the emotions, and the body, basically manifest into the so-called spiritual dimension. And it's just incredible. So I'll let you put another question before I babble on, you know.
You know, it's interesting, as I have been interviewing people for... Well, actually, I've been interviewing people for nearly 40 years. This program is over 11 years old, the focus that we have put into it. And it is fascinating and genuinely fascinating to me, the perspectives that different folks have. And in terms of the questions that I'm asking here in regards to the soul, the mind, the emotions, obviously the physical body, we know what that is and where it resides. The mind, they say, is in the brain, but they can't specify exactly where in the brain. They say the emotions might reside in the heart. They're doing experiments now. They've done studies and so forth that sort of help to support that theory. That's what I'll call it, as a theory, that the emotions reside in the physical muscle we call the heart, which is fascinating. Yes. Okay, well, so then where the heck does the soul reside? Where's this, that essence that makes us who we are, that transcends that, metaphysical aspect of the, I'll say the universe.
Yes. Yes.
That a lot of people have trouble with, that word. I mean, the word is so negatively charged in certain philosophies that I actually worked for a Christian station where I actually would tell them, do you understand that your religion, your philosophy, your system of belief is a metaphysical concept? And they said, oh, no, it can't be. That's New Age. That's of the devil. No. Do you know the definition of the word metaphysical? It's, the definition is beyond the physical. Spiritual, if you want to say spiritual, fine, but it's still metaphysical, just as Hinduism and Buddhism and all of the other isms, they're all absolutely metaphysical. So when you know, our intellect is always trying to define stuff instead of just accepting, yes, that it is, as it says in the Old Testament, for example, that God just, I am that I am. And there is no more further explanation. I just am, period.
Yes.
But the mind just can't wrap around that concept. Kind of like trying to wrap your brain around the concept of the infinite universe. Mm-hmm. How in the world can it go on forever? What is forever? You know, and that we actually go on forever in both directions if you want to look at a linear timeline. We've always existed and we always will exist, but not necessarily in this form, taking on a physical body. I even use the analogy with some of my some people that I talk with. I said, let me ask you. As a matter of fact, I'll ask you, Joseph, how many cars have you had, yes, so far in your life? How many cars have you had?
Oof. I can't remember, to be quite honest.
5, 6, 7, just, okay. But here's the thing. The whole purpose of having that vehicle was what? To get from point A to point B. Well, you changed vehicles because I want a different one. I want a newer model. I want to upgrade. Or I had an accident and I got to replace it. Or it just wore out and I've got to get a new one, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the body is the same thing. It's just a vehicle. And that's why we get into these conversations about, okay, well, if this is just a vehicle, I know where I sit in the car to get from point A to point B. I sit in the driver's seat and I press the gas and the brake and I turn the steering wheel and I use my indicator, et cetera, et cetera. So now we want to know, okay, well, but in the physical body, where do these different elements reside? Because we have this need to compartmentalize. And I have to wonder, maybe through the research and study that you have done, both in science and philosophy, religion and spirituality, that maybe all of these things reside in the same place and they're not specifically designated to specific body parts.
Yes. Richard, you've raised so many big questions. Let me start somewhere and
we'll work
away from there. Take something like, you know, we've invented words to communicate. And, you know, there are some really big words which we throw around, like, you know, life, God, freedom, truth. I mean, take life, for example. You know, people say, you know, what's your life about? And I say, but there is no such thing as my life. And they say, well, what do you mean? Well, I say, listen, you know, we say it's about life and death, but that's just rubbish. It's about birth and death. And what happens in between is living. Life is something totally different, you know. We don't know what life is. We don't know where it came from. We just talk about it because we've given it this word. And, you know, we talk about it as if we know where it came from. And, you know, just, you know, you have to ask yourself such questions then, like, you know, can something truly alive ever come from something that is truly dead? And, you know, the way you think about it, it just makes no sense. That's why, you know, when you ask me, who are we? And I said, we're this infinite potential, because this is just another word for, you know, as I say, you want to call it God, for the so-called primordial beingness. Because one of the things I reasoned in this many, many years of just trying to figure out, like, you know, why we are here, who are we, where we are going, is that for something to exist, there must necessarily be something which has no beginning and no end. I want ask you to think about these things now, because these are like things that come to you after many days of meditation. Mm-hmm. You know, but let's just build from there. For something to exist, there must necessarily be something which has no beginning and no end. And the best way I could define this, because you see, in all my definitions have to give them a scientific explanation. I have to give them a philosophical explanation. I have to give them a religious explanation, and I have to give them a spiritual explanation. Otherwise, it doesn't pass with me, you know, because I was always the annoying guy. Oh, here's another one. You know, take any literature and just any seminar, you know, people giving, talking about this and that, and you will see what they mainly talk about is the way it is. You know, but not take the popular books like, what is this book, The Secret? Mm-hmm. You know, this is the way it is. You know, there's like the cause and there is the effect and there's the law of the attraction. You know, some people then tell you how you can use certain knowledge, you know, what you can do to improve, but hardly anybody talks about the why. And this is the big question, you know. We are inquiring about our meaning, our purpose, and nobody's talking about why. So I was always the annoying guy at the back going, but why? 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 they used to hate me, like, you know, love is everything. Why? And, you know, there's a law of attraction. Why? And in the end, I just said, you know what? I'm going to go and try and figure it out myself.
Yeah.
And obviously, I have the answers. But let's face it, these are just theories, you know, because ultimately, one of the things you get to realize is just truth and relative are just relative to the observer, whoever is observing. You know, we unfortunately don't deal in absolute truths. And to give the top scientists credit these days, because, I mean, I spend just days listening to seminars and everything, you know, I'm lucky like that. I have all the time in the world. And it, I don't know if you've noticed, but the top scientists now started to actually make it explicitly clear, science does not deal in absolute truths. And that is exactly the truth. And I still have fun talking to religious people because, you know, I always say, hang on, you know, before we begin, we have to understand the terms. You have to explain to me what you are proposing. And they mean like, what you mean what I'm proposing? I'm proposing very simple. There's God. And I'm saying, yeah, but, you know, okay, let's start somewhere. Is there God and there is the world? God and the world are separate, or is God everything? Because, you know, this really influences everything else you're going to tell me. And they say, well, how does it influence? Well, you know, if God is everything, then essentially there is no creation. I say, how can there be no creation? Well, because if God is everything, then God doesn't create. Everything is everything. You can't have any more than everything. Mm-hmm. So which God only brings forth a part of itself. And inevitably, you are part of God. There can be no other way if God is everything. But if God is separate to everything, and there is God and there is the world, and then obviously you have the dilemma of, you know, where did God come from? And then you have to explain me that, and then we can, you know, proceed on there. So I've thought about all these things, but as I said, again, rather than babble on, you direct me and ask me some specific questions, and I'll be very, very happy to get involved in this conversation.
Well, you're already pretty darn involved, let me tell you. It's fascinating to me because these are the kinds of things that I've been pondering most of my life as well. As I started working, especially for the Christian radio station, and I started to hear certain things being spoken about, I would process that information in my head going, okay, I see what you read, and I hear how you're interpreting it, and it doesn't make any sense. It does not make any logical sense. So please, you know, help me to try to understand. And a lot of times, this was sort of the response that I would get back. Just go read the writings of the founding fathers of the faith, because they ask these questions too. They have the answers, and yes, you'll be fine. And I'm going, well, wait a minute. Okay. First of all, who set them up as the arbiters of the faith? And of course, we're talking about Catholicism and Christianity. Who set them up as the arbiters of the faith? And then the second thing was, you know what? I must be in pretty darn good company if I'm asking the same questions of a group of men that I've never heard of before. Then I must be in that same group, which means now I can count myself as part of at least the present modern day member of the Founding Fathers. Because I'm asking the same, and so are you. So are you, Joseph, because you're asking the same questions, trying to get some kind of answer that resonates within your soul, within your being. There's a great word. I love using this word over and over again on this program. I finally did read this big, thick tome. They call it The Stranger in a Strange Land. And I finally read it. Now, first of all, I have to preface it by saying, I did not like the ending. I was very sad at the way they ended the book. But I loved the word they used in there to describe what we would use, the word understand. I understand. Ah, but this fantastic word, to grok, to grok is not just to understand. It's to assimilate, to take into every soul of your being, every atom of what makes you who you are. That's what to grok is. And that's what we're trying to do. And Greg Braden shared with us on a program when we talked about the healing power of belief. And I was asking him, I said, so what's going to be our evolutionary process? And he says, right now we believe a lot of stuff. But the evolutionary process, from his perspective, is one day we're going to know. We're not going to believe anymore. We're going to know. And it sounds to me like that's what you are trying to transcend, that chasm. It really is a chasm between what we believe is true and what we really genuinely truly know. But, you know, you sort of raise a sort of a dichotomy. Is my truth and what I know right and yours wrong, or vice versa? Or is what you and I both know, being slightly different, part of the same truth?
Yes. Richard, we could talk for hours. You've just raised two very big things, which I actually tackle in the book. And one is I'm trying to show that we need to desperately reconstruct our understanding of epistemology, you know, what is it to be knowledgeable? And the second, I've actually devised a theory by which nature teaches us right and wrong.
Hear, hear.
I don't know which direction you would prefer to go.
Well, let's go ahead and jump into the whole aspect of nature is our teacher, because I've been telling people that time and time again, and I use this example. I'll keep it very brief. Show me what species other than man that stores up for more than a season of anything, including money, food, clothing, shelter, etc., etc.
Yes. Animals never get bored, if you've noticed as well, you know?
Yeah. There you go.
Let me give you a short rundown on my theory of right and wrong. And it basically goes like this. You know, nature had billions of years to manifest into reality, to basically figure out the most efficient ways. So, you know, there's a reason why a bubble is round or a planet is round, or why our DNA is a spiral, or why galaxies are spiral. These are just very efficient shapes. So, you know, over billions of years, nature became very efficient. But nature didn't stop at efficiency. It went on and produced intelligent, self-aware beings. You know, we are not just aware, we are aware of being aware. And that necessarily raises the question of who is aware. And so it necessarily raises the question of responsibility. Now, what is responsibility? It's our ability to respond to situation in a way that we see fit. Now combining, if you combine responsibility and efficiency, okay, I've got lost a little bit now because I'm thinking of millions of things at the same time. trying to get everything together. But really, not responsibility inevitably gets us to question, you know, where we are from, why we are here, and you know, eventually, consciousness inherently seeks growth, and it asks itself, what is the purpose and meaning? And so, what I'm saying, the nature is showing us the way, is showing us the right direction. The true, the right and wrong is never an absolute right and wrong, but it's showing us direction. So if we combine nature's efficiency with our responsibility and tie this in with meaning, I call this process responsible co-creation, how to responsibly and efficiently co-create a meaningful reality, we will inevitably discover the right direction. Yeah. And take any example, for example, I don't know, you want to cross the road, you know, you don't just cross the road like a headless chicken. You are responsible beings. So you look left and right, and then you take the shortest direction. Why the shortest direction across the road? Because it's the most efficient. And why do you want to get across the road? Because there is some meaning to it. I mean, there is some meaning which we have added to it. So combining responsibility with efficiency, turning it into meaningful experience, it actually produces the right direction. And the more you apply these three principles, the more you see how us acting collectively as you know, one race, one nation, one religion, which I call humanity, is the only right way forward. It literally, nature lays out right and wrong for us, and you know, apply it in any situation and you will get the right direction, never the ultimate right and wrong, but the right direction. I just say one more thing. People say, oh, what about in the case of, I don't know, some Islamist fanatics who just want to like kill everyone? To that I just say, listen, you know, you can't get into the morality and include politics. Politics doesn't work in that.
Yeah. Well, there's an element of nature that I found very interesting. And when I watch, for example, a National Geographic special where they're showing a gazelles, they're flitting across the prairie or the plains, whatever, wherever it is they are. And all of a sudden you see off in the distance, you see, I guess it would be what, a tiger, I guess, or a cheetah or jaguar, whatever it is that would then chase the gazelle across the prairie and overtake it, take it down and kill it and eat it. And the term that we give that is predator prey.
Yes.
But if you were able to read the minds of the gazelle and the tiger, okay?
Interesting.
If you could read the minds, they don't see it that way. They see it just as life. This is just the process of life.
Yes.
There's no right or wrong. There's no good or bad. It just is the way that it is. Or let's go to the macrocosm. You have stuff hurtling through the infinity of space. And sometimes some of these things that are hurtling through space, they collide. Oh, I don't know. Like, oh, who knows? Maybe one day a bus-size meteor or comet collides with this beautiful big blue marble we call home and we call Earth, and it destroys everything.
Yes.
Now, to you and me, that's bad. But in the cosmos, that's just what is.
Yes, because we never, I mean, you know, we are programmed to seek pleasure and avoid pain. And you said something very important about meaning. I was listening to some of your previous shows, and I forgot who you were speaking to. But you said, listen, you know, people tell me life has no meaning, and that you tell them that's just not true, because, you know, you give life meaning. And I'm saying this is just, you know, so ridiculous, people claiming, you know, there's no meaning and purpose. I mean, after all, nature evolved into beings capable of giving meaning to things. I mean, how much more evidence do you need?
Yeah, exactly. We're talking with Joseph Ring. We're going to continue our conversation here. We're going to literally be all over the board. We're going to try to stay between the lines, but who knows? We're going to take an off-ramp here. We're going to go an on-ramp here. We just don't know where we're going with this. This is book one, the unfinished book about who we are. It's First Steps to Self-Discovery. We're going to get to that as well. And we want you to stay right where you are. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Do me a favor. Stay tuned.
Tell me your story.
This is one of my favorite programs because it's a program that deals with so many different great concepts and points and ideas that our guest has thrown out to us. For example, who are we and where are we going? What is reality and what is truth? How do we harness our full limitless potential? I want to dive into that one with our guest right now. Joseph Raine is the author of the unfinished book about who we are, First Steps to Self-Discovery, and the website, ladies and gentlemen. The website, you can't miss this. I give you my website every week. It's so hard for you to forget because it's richarddugan.com. Joseph's website is JosephRain.com. That's R-A-I-N, like the rain that we so desperately desire here in California and probably other parts of the world as well. But I want you to jump in and talk to us about this concept of limitless potential. I have to tell you that when I start thinking about the loss of lives through, and it doesn't matter what means, whether it's natural, that's the natural course of things, okay? Die of natural causes. But it's the conflicts that we have around the world, that we have in our neighborhoods, that we sadly have in some of our houses of worship and schools and so forth here in the States. And the first thing that comes to my mind after sort of processing the sadness over the loss is the loss of the potential of that individual. What could they have brought to our society and civilization that could propel us forward and upward and higher consciousness as well as technology that now we're not going to see because that particular person's contribution is gone. Talk to us about our potential as human beings and how limitless it is.
Yes. Can I ask you a simple question just to shoot me off on this in this direction?
Sure.
Yeah. What do you think is one certainty in the world?
One certainty?
I love asking this question.
Well, I'm going to throw this one out because it's as certain as anything else I can think of, and that is that the sun is going to rise and set every 24 hours as we conceptualize time.
Okay. So the reality is that the sun doesn't set and rise, isn't it? It's just we're on a planet that's spinning around.
That is.
I was hoping for. Okay, most people's answer to this question is it's death.
And
I'm saying, well, yeah, you know, why would you think about something like that? I mean, the only certainty, as far as I see it in the world, is change, because you see, from change comes all reality. I mean, imagine a static universe. You just can't because you're thinking about it. So without change, there is no reality. And in biological beings, we comprehend change as aging, funny enough. But really, there is no such thing as aging. There is just change. And when change is profound, we call it transformation. So look what you get. You know, you're talking about the loss of infinite potential. This deliberation that I'm just deliberating where it gets us, it basically gets us here. Change is inevitable. Growing old is a choice, while death is simply a transformation into the unknown. I mean, this is the reality of things. You know, we talk about getting old, but this is just a word we've invented because, you know, what does change mean in living beings is, we have two options. We either grow or we decline. And we've somehow, and it's really annoying. I mean, honestly, Richard, I'm 51 and people, you know, often mistake me for a student because people, you know, say, how old are you? And I said, I'm not. They say, what do you mean? How old are you? I said, I'm not. Well, how? I said, look, I'm not old. You know, who invented this concept? Because, you know, okay, the body Okay, I admit, it gets worn out, but I mean, we're working on that. But
I
our
have a small
emotional
budget and a big
intelligence,
family.
our
Holidays are a challenge.
mind, our
Well, I like
spiritual
challenge,
wisdom,
but
I mean, everything is just expanding. Who's talking about, I love discussing this concept with scientists because, they've invented this word entropy, which basically says that everything in the world is disintegrating into chaos. And I'm saying that's just not true because it's the inherent nature of consciousness to expand, to seek both. And they're just not ready for it. So they don't really know what to answer to that. But what I'm saying is, I don't just say out of nothing, we are the infinite potential. There are like five books and 36 years of thinking behind it. We are literally, I mean, let's go into the scientific explanation. This is probably like the most profound. What we've reduced our reality to now, there are even no particles. They are just virtual fields and forces. I mean, I'm not going to go too much into detail. I never actually thought I'm going to be so much into science. And this virtual fields and forces, there's another word for it. It's just they're basically popping in and out of existence at the speed of light. And then we have, the whole problem of quantum mechanics is the problem of measurement. Depends how you measure it, you get different realities. Literally, what we're discussing is infinite potential. So just to return to your question, what happens, this wasted potential? There is no wastage in our universe. There is just change and there is transformation. And next time somebody wants to talk about life, just please stop them and ask them, what is life? Because I bet you any money what they're talking about is living.
Yeah.
Because life, as far as I can see, is just written into the fabric of reality. Life is the infinite potential. It's just everywhere. And as you say, when we say death is just, they say, life is gone. That's just ridiculous, What's gone is our maybe our awareness or our awareness of awareness. We basically want to remember who we are. We want to remember the self rather than who we are. And we want to remember our loved ones. And, we call it death, but really, I've got three chapters about death. Death, what is death? Death just, no one can touch it. No one's ever seen it. We see the process of dying, but what is the actual death? It's just transformation into the unknown. And you get all these wise people talking about it. Okay, you have these people who've had apparently the near-death experience, but guess what? Mysteriously, they're all alive talking about it,
Yeah, it actually
It's
raises that question that I've posed, the philosophical question to a lot of the religious that, Paul says it is appointed to man, every man wants to die, and then the judgment. And the first thing I point up rather quickly, by the way, is okay, then Lazarus broke the rule because Jesus raised him from the dead. Now, whether the story is true or not, you've got that in the book that is held sacred by a lot of people. And so you have a problem here. Was he dead or was he not dead? Someone having a near-death experience, did they come back from death to life? So now they've broken the rule. So these are the kinds of things I ponder. Now, I wanted to jump on something real quick. You mentioned as far as the one constant in the universe, of course, is change. There's a great quote, and it's a lyric to a song. And it goes basically like this: "The days, they pass so quickly now, the nights are seldom long. Time around me whispers when it's cold. The changes somehow frighten me. Yet still, I have to smile. It turns me on to think of growing old." And I think about that. And by the way, I'm actually pleased that you told me how old you are because for so many years, I was always the baby in the group, right? And now I can say, young man, I'm 58, but I still feel 17 inside. And I don't know what that's all about. I'm still trying to make sure that my body is not allowed to do the things that the 17-year-old inside wants to do because I don't want to hurt my body. It's the vehicle that it can only be repaired so much, right? But it's fascinating to me how, and I don't know if you're 51. I don't know if you can say this or not. I can say this just as confidently as I can say that my life has meaning. That if I walked outside the studio today, walked out into the street without due caution and care and due vigilance, and I got hit by a bus or something, right?
Yes. I know what you're going to say. I think, please carry on.
I'm ready to go. I'm good. Yes. That's not to say that I'm finished. It's not to say that there isn't more that I would like to do. But if it's my time, I'm not going to fight it. You know, if it's my time for that moment of transformation, in using, coining your phrase, that it's not the end of anything, it's transformation. I'm good with that. You know, I really am. Because I'm even more curious about what's on the other side, as if there were actually another side. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I believe that all of this stuff exists right where we are. It's just that there are different frequencies. There are different phases. We can't see or comprehend them with our five senses, maybe with our sixth, as we like to say. I'm always curious when someone transitions. I had a dear friend on the 12th of September of 2018. Dear friend, I taught broadcasting to. I trained him at the radio station, and we became good friends. He would call me his bald brother. And he passed away, and I still talk to him to this day, you know. I just had a little car incident, and I say, hey, you know, Dennis, I wish you were here. I could hear the words, and then all of a sudden the words start coming into my head. It's like I'm hearing his voice saying, hey, man, it's okay. You know, you're not hurt. And, hey, you know, it happens, and life goes on. And imagine living in New York, which is where he's from. Imagine living there and having a car. You might as well buy the car already dinged up, because, you know, that's what's going to happen to it. But he didn't disappear. I still remember him. I still have a feeling for him, that emotion, you know, that we talked about earlier. And I do hear that voice. Now, is my mind making those voices up so that it will, my mind is basically trying to codify my intellect and my emotions? I don't know. But you know what? I don't care, because I feel better when I do that. And to me, that's really all that matters.
Exactly. But this is the power of faith. You know, I always say to people, I say to religious people, because they say I'm against religion. I'm not against religion. I just say, listen, I just want us to understand what we're talking about.
Yes.
You know, if we can agree that you have faith in God, not knowledge about God, then we're fine about that. You know, it's faith. You believe that God exists. And, you know, after all, I mean, in book three, I've written a scientific theory of faith creates reality. You know, let's face it, it's God is more real in, what, 50% of the world's population than a lot of other things. And, you know, people say, does God exist? And I said, well, if you believe in it, it exists. Does fear exist? You know, I mean, you may be afraid of something. I'm looking at you. I can feel your fear. You know, I mean, does it exist? If you believe it exists, it's real. You know, faith is amazingly, amazingly powerful. What I was going to say is something you were saying earlier, like, you know, about these various things like reincarnation. I mean, anything, you can throw anything at me. What's interesting, and I have a scientific theory for it, you know, and it's plausible scientific theory. Obviously, it doesn't prove anything, but it just shows the potential. And in quantum mechanics, you know, according to quantum mechanics, theoretically, anything is possible. Okay, like, you know, some things are highly improbable, but everything is possible. Anything is possible. And, you know, people sometimes say, like, you know, how could you possibly believe that, you know, there is something after death? And I'm saying, well, look, it's not just, it's not a matter of believing. It's a matter of, you know, theorizing. Like, I mean, just imagine, like, we know now that the universe is basically a big, giant quantum computer, you know, and it if there is God, or sometimes in the future. So basically, you, me, everyone, we are basically just programs, you know, data. We are data, you know. If we could reduce you and we were already done the human genome, and we are working now on the human connectome, and they reckon by the time we finish that, you know, we'll be able to put who we are on a disk and, you know, flash it onto another planet. Maybe that's how God works. Maybe that's how life started on Earth. You know, we're basically going to be, have you on a disk. And if one day we have some powerful entity, which we are, I like to say, we are basically, you know, God's apprentices. We are basically in training to become gods, because that's where we are going. You know, if one day we can just, somebody's going to say, oh, you know, millions of years ago, there was this guy, Joseph Rain. Oh, yeah, okay, you know, we'll find the data of what was Joseph Rain, and we'll just, you know, assimilate the data again and bring him back. I mean, I know these are theory, but they are scientifically sound theories if we had the power, you know. But then so are all the other debates about the free will, debates about morality, you know. All these are theories because, you know, unfortunately, we don't deal in absolute truths. But as your friend says, you know, one day there are a lot of things we will know as a fact, but saying this again, they will be relative to our universe.
And I certainly understand that. And it continues to raise more and more questions that elicit more answers. And that's the thing I love about the questions, that when the answers come, it raises even more questions, which is the whole point. In spite of the fact that when I was in my early formative metaphysical years, and I consider myself to be a metaphysician, someone said to me, says, you know, you need to leave some of those questions to answer in the next life, you know, meaning, you know, after this life is over, death, heaven, you know, talk to God kind of thing. And it's like, I can't do that. You know, my personality is not designed to hold off asking these questions. I mean, I constantly am frustrating people when I talk to them about the nature, for example, and this, of course, I know is a futile argument, the nature of politics. Okay. And I'm a strong believer in the power of words, and that you chose the words that you chose, Joseph, that you placed in this first book, the unfinished book about who we are, in book one, as well as two and three, and who knows how many more there are going to be. You chose those words because you had a specific intent. Well, in politics, they choose the words that they say because they have a specific intent. Their intent is to get that office, to get elected to that position, so they have that power, they have that control, whatever it might be. And so when I say, how can that person say that about that other person or about these people or about this situation and so on and so forth, and someone will say to me, Richard, stop being so naive. It's just politics. To which I respond, no, it's not. Words have power.
Exactly. You know, I mean, I would love to talk about politics. I don't know if this is the time and the place, because I have a lot to say about everything. But let's perhaps, because it's more to do with the book, talk about education.
Yes.
You know, I've raised before that you know, it's all about intellect. We fill our children and grown-ups with data, and, you know, we call them knowledgeable, knowledge-able. And I'm saying, like, even Einstein already said, like, you know, any fool can know. The point is to understand. But what I'm saying is, yes, but what I'm saying, what I'm arguing is, like, we need to go a step further. And, you know, this indirectly applies to politics. We have to apply that knowledge, because, you know, having data is one thing. Understanding data is another thing. But unless you're applying this knowledge, and nature teaches us that we should apply it for some meaningful and greater purpose, then really, you know, your knowledge is still ignorance, because you have not contributed to the well-being of this world. And my whole big part of my purpose of writing this book, because really I was just researching for myself. I had no need to teach anybody anything. And, you know, I just want to share. One of the big things is to show the people why not just how, but why we desperately need to start teaching emotional intelligence at school. Because what happens with emotions? Oh, there is the psychologist and there are pharmaceutical drugs. I mean, it's no wonder that 80% of the American people are on some form of drugs today, because nobody is teaching emotional intelligence. You know, take someone like, you know, your president. People like to say this and like to say that. And I say, listen, you know, stop right there. The guy is not stupid. You know, what he lacks is emotional intelligence. You know, take any people in the world. When there is a huge disagreement, it's not because people are stupid. You know, it's just a difference in the way we measure our reality. And that's heavily involved with emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. And what we're doing with emotional intelligence, I really want to, like, you know, speak to someone like, you know, Sam Harris or Jordan Peterson and ask them, like, you know, okay, instead of having these millions of psychologists, why don't we change psychology, put psychologists into school and start teaching emotional intelligence to people, start teaching them why they react the way they react, you know? Because I tell you, when I was 15 years old and I had to deal with my illness, I discovered some amazing, amazing, amazing things. And, you know, by the time I was 20, so-called living became so easy. And, you know, every day I watch people struggle. I watch them fight about things. I watch them do the most incredible things. And I'm thinking, reality is so simple. Why so much hassle? And over the years, I came to the conclusion that it's just lack of emotional intelligence. I mean, how do you see that?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I believe, setting political correctness aside for a moment, I believe that it is possible to convey one's thoughts and ideas in such a way that doesn't, at the same time, put people off. You know, we may disagree, you and I, on a particular point, but that doesn't mean that I have to attack your person, verbally especially, or demean you in some fashion just because we have a difference of opinion. And I think that's what you're alluding to, and that's what frustrates me more than anything. And I've said this before, and I, again, not wanting to go too far into the politics of this. But the moment that our president announced his candidacy and he hadn't said much of anything about, per se, his policies, I didn't want him as president because I didn't want a bully. I'd had enough of bullies in school, and I didn't want one as president. And unfortunately, from my perspective, we got that. But I had to do some growing. And I finally was able to go through a couple of steps I want to share real quick. One was, I finally was able to say, thank you, teacher, for teaching me how I don't want to behave. That was the first step. And a few months later, I was then able to take the next step and say, I forgive you. But even more importantly, I forgive myself for allowing myself to be dragged down that road. I don't want to do that. I don't want to waste my time anymore thinking about it or dwelling on it or debating about it, because it doesn't serve me. It only wastes my energy, saps my potential. I don't want to go there anymore. And I'm trying to teach other people to do the same, that none of this matters in the grand scheme of things, because who knows, maybe there is a bus-sized meteor headed our way, and none of this is going to matter anyway.
Richard, I mean, I just hope that, you know, people listening to this realize what an important message you just conveyed, because forgiveness, you know, if we could just learn to forgive. And I'm just actually in the middle of, because I've been listening to all these various meditation applications and stuff like that. And it's so annoying, because I just see, like, you know, there's all these so-called teachers these days. They're just passing on the knowledge. They've never actually, you can see they've never personally experienced what they're teaching. They've never experienced the truth. And because what they would be teaching is allowing and forgiveness, you know, and you're the first person I've heard say, Forgiveness is all about forgiving the self. It's not, you know, it doesn't mean you excuse the act of the other person. Mm-hmm. No, you basically accept what you were saying before. Reality is the way it is. People did what they did. Mm-hmm. You know, you have two options. You can cry about it for the rest of your life, or you can forgive yourself. It's not about excusing the act, and you move on. Why? Because we are living beings, and this means we are designed for growth. The only other option is decline. So there is change. We have two options, growth or decline. Guess which one you're going to choose? And not forgiving is choosing decline. And just one more thing before I finish. I'm saying to the people, like, because they're all into this thing of maintenance. I'm saying maintenance is just a slower version of decline. We are living beings. We have to grow. If you want to keep moving, you have to grow. And people like to ask me, you know, what is the purpose of life? I'm saying, look, as far as I know, you know, we were designed for growth. So one of the ultimate purposes is to grow. And from growth comes expansion, comes everything else. And, you know, thank you for saying some of these things. You made me really happy because I've never heard anybody talking about forgiveness in such a way.
Well, and to add to what you said about not excusing the act, in other words, you know, you're when one forgives oneself, then they take responsibility for that act that they're forgiving themselves of.
Yes.
You know, so
yes.
You have to acknowledge, I have to acknowledge my role in this crazy dynamic, and that, okay, I admit I was part of it, and I'm not going to be part of it anymore, and I'm going to move on, and I'm not going to beat myself up over it because I was part of it. I'm going to raise myself up because I'm not going to be a part of it anymore. Now, I wanted to touch on something, you know, that you alluded to, and then go to another area. Hopefully we can dovetail into it. You know, we talk about, you know, what is reality? We've already talked about the concept of, you know, what is truth. And I love this one scene from a science fiction series here in the States, Star Trek Next Generation, and the robot or android Data, he utters a phrase that has stuck with me to this day. And the episode, without going into too much detail, deals with them having to deal with the protagonist in this particular episode and the holodeck, which isn't real. You know, it's like our virtual reality that we have now. And at the end of the episode, Data is standing there with this box that has sufficient power and space. You know, it's like, I don't know what the largest number is, Google bytes or what have you, but it's big, right? So that this person thinks they're in a holodeck, or they're in a holodeck that's in this box that's no more than maybe 6 by 6 by 6. And it's illuminated, you know, it's for science fiction. And so this person's traveling the universe inside this box, and Data is holding this box. And he looks up and he utters this phrase, computer, end program. Because he's not even certain, as an android with a highly developed brain, because it's been obviously manufactured, he's not even certain that the reality that he's living in is real. How does he know he's not? How do we, you and I, Joseph, how do we know we're not part of somebody else's program?
You know, I'm going to say something now, which, again, another thing that really gets me crazy is people say, oh, this is just an illusion. Well, what is an illusion? Illusion is just another way of seeing reality. I mean, come on, people, like, you know, it's just. And then, you know, I'm saying, well, you know, we all already know that this whole reality we are seeing is an illusion. If you look at it from the point of, microscopic way, because mm-hmm. I mean, the reality is there are just forces. You know, we believe we are sitting on a chair when really there's just one force pushing against the other. You know, I mean, so which reality are we talking about? And this brings me to another crazy concept in medicine. I'm really, like, you know, following all this health stuff and stuff like that. And the concept of what's the matter with me now? You know, when, like, they say they give you a drug, but they give you nothing, and you experience an improvement.
Oh, the placebo, yes.
The placebo effect, yeah. And they say, oh, that doesn't count. I'm saying, well, how doesn't it count? The person just got better, you know? And then they say, no, placebo effect doesn't count because, you know, it wasn't the medicine, it was his faith, or, you know, they don't say it like this, but it was the power of his belief that basically got him better. And that doesn't count. I mean, come on, like, you know, what kind of a crazy world are we living in?
Well, that person can't say that anymore. There was a 60 Minutes piece done on the placebo effect with cancer patients. And here was the amazing thing, Joseph. Normally, when you do the placebo, you don't tell the person they're receiving a placebo, right?
Exactly.
But in this study, they told the people they were receiving a placebo, and it still worked.
Wow. Here is the, you know, we're straight back to the infinite potential, you know, which, as I said, we didn't discuss that much. I mean, how I came to the whole thing, the definition, but that's what we are. We are this infinite potential for creation. And, you know, people say, how can you say we are infinite beings when, like, you know, just look at the body, like the body dies. And I'm saying, yes, but I mean, you know, we are still, everybody's still talking about the Darwin's theory of evolution. I'm saying, you know, Darwin's theory of evolution was a theory of biological evolution. Mm-hmm. We have since evolved into conscious beings. Do you understand the gigantic leap from physical beings to conscious beings? And even more, I'm saying, can you imagine how many such leaps await us in the future?
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
Just contemplating this, you know, there you are, a totally, totally unaware of yourself. And then, you know, suddenly you evolve into this aware, and then aware of being aware. And now we are at the stage where we are wondering about our purpose and meaning. And people are still talking about Darwin, like, you know, I'm saying, come on, wake up. We are into the consciousness game right now. And where, you know, tell us a simple question. Where does consciousness end? Where does it begin and where does it end? You know,
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. But I do know this, and I've always found this fascinating. You referenced Darwin's theory of evolution. Didn't say it was the principle of evolution, if you will, or the rule, you know, the truth of evolution. No, it's a theory. And I remember when a movie came out here in the States, Last Temptation of Christ, and there was a book that it was based on by a gentleman by the name of Kazantzakis. And the religious station I was working for, of course, began a campaign against it, began telling people to boycott it. And by the way, the movie made a hell of a lot more money than it should have. And the more they talked about it, the more they complained and moaned and groaned about it, the more curious I became. So I went and got a copy of the book. And I read through most of it, but the preface was what really caught my eye. And it was at the beginning of the preface where Kazantzakis says, and I paraphrase, these are just my musings. I'm just saying, what if? I'm just saying, what if? And then I went to see the movie. Not a great movie, but I was not offended by it. But of course, as my boss told me after I left that radio station, that I was a casualty of Christian radio. I'm proud to be a casualty. Because I didn't take it seriously, because it was fiction. It was Kazantzakis' fictional story of Jesus, if he had not died on the cross and married and had kids. And how do we know that he didn't? Because we only have one source that tells us that he was actually an individual. I actually did some research trying to find historical evidence of the existence of this carpenter from Nazareth, and there isn't any other than in the Bible. And maybe a couple of the founding fathers who want to expound and so forth. Where is he on the census rolls? Which, by the way, they talk about in the New Testament. That whole purpose of Joseph and Mary heading off was so that they could be counted in the census. Well, that means their names would have had to have been written down. And when this kid was born, his name would have to be written down. Where is it? Where is it? Logic is what I'm, you know, but I digress. We're talking with Joseph Raine, and we're talking about the unfinished book about who we are, First Steps to Self-Discovery. Self-discovery, self. Tell me about how you began your own personal self-discovery. What was the catalyst that said, I need to know more about who I am? I don't understand who I am.
Yeah. As I said, it all began at age 15 back in 1982 when I literally overnight came down with this hugely painful illness. And my doctors told me to, you know, learn about the power of the mind. And soon I discovered it was something to do with my emotions. And Richard, I started to realize, you know, because I couldn't lie to myself. I couldn't pretend. I had to be absolutely present because the pain was just crazy, crazy, crazy. So I started to follow my emotions. What normal people, I call it normal, don't realize that whatever we think, whatever we're doing, literally everything we sense, think, say, and do, I developed this phrase to include everything. There is a process going on in our body, and I felt everything. I felt it like it was just an exaggerated case. I would just burst out in this, you know, just start burning, basically. I was like a fireman in the Incredible Four. And that's when I had to get really honest with myself. And I started to discover, I said, wow, it's amazing how our mind collaborates with our emotions and how they manifest in my body and how together they manifest into this metaphysical, into my faith, into, you know, how I experience the world. And I thought, I started to play around with that because I had to, you know. I mean, it was just so painful. And, you know, over the next 4 to 5 years, I just realized I am co-creating my own reality. It's unbelievable. You know, I choose the world I cannot control. Here is a very simple way of putting it. I cannot control what happens in the world, but I can always control how I respond to what happens in the world. And this is it. We are, as you said before, we are in the driving seat. We decide, you know, we're not going to have time to get involved into free will, but we are co-creating our reality on every step of our way. And just very briefly, if I touch very big words you said before, just because we disagree, we don't have to be enemies. It's great. I mean, you know, would you want to, you know, live in a world of 7 billion people where everybody agrees, or, you know, people have different opinions?
Yeah, we've seen civilizations where that seems to be the case, where everybody agrees, lockstep, goose stepping and high kicking and all of those good things, you know, and because I'm not going to learn anything if you and I agree on everything. We're talking here with Joseph Raine. He has this wonderful series. Book one is what we've been focusing on, but this is an ongoing conversation. The unfinished book about who we are. This is First Steps to Self-Discovery. You know, I love this quote. As the book itself says, and it reminds me of the Buddha's experience, the one who seeks is the answer.
Absolutely.
That's unbelievably profound and yet mind-bending.
And it's just, again, it's just one of those quotes that you come to after many, many years of discovering, which is just in a simple words explains everything, but it could take a lifetime to get there, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I encourage, go ahead.
If I just say another really important quote I would love to share with the people is, you know, because people often ask me, how about this, how about that, how about, you know, happiness and this and that. And I say, listen, you know, ultimately, just think of this. There is nowhere to go, nothing to achieve, and nobody to become except being who we are right here, right now. Just concentrate on that, and the answers will come, you know.
Mm-hmm. I'll leave you with a passage that I pondered for a long time, and for me, I got it. Be ye perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. Now, the word I focused on was the word perfect.
Yes.
And of course, the doctrine and dogma theology teaches that perfection has to do with good and evil, right and wrong, you know, high and low and so forth, the duality. And then I began to do some further research in other areas as well as in the Old Testament, and I began to realize the definition of that word perfect has nothing to do with the duality. It has to do with what you just said. It has to do with just being. God said, I am that I am. That is perfection. Be who you are.
And the best way is through allowing. And I cringe when I hear these people, as I said, you know, they say they're teachers of meditation and they teach people what to do, you know, how to do meditation. Meditation is not something we do. Meditation is something we are. Hmm. You don't do anything. You just allow things to be.
I believe it was Teresa of Avila. I think that's who it was, who was quoted. And this quote was I found in the book Autobiography of a Yogi, which is my metaphysical primer. And she said that God is amongst the pots and the pans, not in the lotus posture. And that's where my meditation is. If I'm there doing the dishes, if I'm cleaning the cat boxes, if I'm out playing with the dog, if I'm just looking out the porch at the great valley before me with the trees and the mountain ranges from my home, that's meditation.
Being present.
Yeah. Yeah. Before I let you go, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program. This has just been fascinating. And yes, we could go on for hours. And you know what? We just might. 2019 could be the year of Joseph Rain here on Tell Me Your Story. I will tell you that we did a series of programs, Joseph, on mythology called Mythosophia, Exploring the Depths of Myth and Wisdom. I got to tell you, for me, I think I got my PhD because it was fantastic. Had such a great time. So who knows? Maybe we'll do a series of programs on this whole aspect of finding out who we are and this whole aspect of self-discovery, as well as the next steps after that. For folks who want to find out more about you, they can certainly go to Joseph Rain. That's JOSEPHRAIN.com. We will be linked to your website. And I would assume they would probably be able to, through that website, maybe even get in touch with you as well if they've got some pressing questions that have been nagging them, who knows, maybe for decades, that maybe you may not have the answer. Because, again, going back to that quote, the one who seeks is the answer. But maybe you might elicit in them some different thought. How could they do that? Yes. Can they get in touch with you through your website?
Yes, they can. There is an email, the info@josephrain.com, and I'm always happy to answer any stuff. I'm very active on Quora, by the way, because people ask all sorts of crazy questions on Quora, like what is spirituality, you know, and if you're spiritual and someone tells you there is no soul, you know, do you get upset? And I'm quoting this because this is something that came through today. So, yeah, I'm always happy to when people get in touch, you know. But please do check out the book also on Amazon. And if anyone can leave any reviews, I'll be just overwhelmed because it's all about sharing. Nobody's trying to teach anybody anything, you know.
And just trying to share the ideas and get them out there. And again, as we say, if it resonates with you, then run with it and do your best. Are there plans of putting this into Audible format?
Absolutely, because you know people normally ask me, you know, what book did you read? I said I don't, and they are horrified. I said, listen, I listen to books. You know? It's far more efficient because you know I drive in the car. I'm always doing something. I would love to put it into Audible. Yes, I would.
Yeah, it's one of the things that I do on the side as well is produce Audible books, and I love doing it because I learn so much through the process. It's just incredible, and you know, if you find yourself outside of Slovenia, outside of London, the UK, you know, you find yourself on the west coast of the U.S., central coast, Santa Barbara specifically, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation. And whether it's there or via Skype, I definitely want to continue this conversation.
I'm going to hold you to this. I'll be in Santa Barbara. Don't you worry.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. Well, keep in touch so we can have you here on the program. And before we let you go, I have three final questions that I ask all of my guests. And you're probably going to get one hell of a kick out of the very first one. And again, my thanks for giving us so much time. That first question is, who is Joseph Rain?
Yes. Can I be very direct?
Yes.
Yes. Joseph Rain is my name. It's by no means who I am. That's why I always say, like, you know, when I introduce myself, my name is Joseph Rain. You will never hear me say, I am Joseph Rain. Mm-hmm. Because this brings us back to our, first question, you know, mm-hmm. Who is Joseph Rain? Joseph Rain is the infinite potential for creation. And so are you, and so is everybody else. So let's create something amazing.
And to that, what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
Oh, yes, a fantastic question. This is what something I already touched on. It's basically make people aware that we have to move from knowledge toward understanding and toward application. And for this, we necessarily need to move from our mind obsession towards, you know, emotional intelligence. Emotions are far older than our intellect. They just influence. We cannot think without feeling something. And you know, now we're being, you know, we are shifting into the age of technology. And, you know, I listen to these debates every day, these clever, clever people. And I'm just, you know, going unless you're going to stop just thinking with the mind and connected with your emotions, we're never going to find the right answers. We have to connect responsibility with efficiency, because I'm inviting everyone to consider something very, very, it's a crazy idea, but it's true, you know. What is technology? Technology is just our way of being more efficient. And what did I say at the beginning? Nature is very efficient. So this would basically imply that technology, artificial intelligence, is our way of returning to nature. It's our inevitable way forward. No one has actually propose something as crazy as that. So I would love to speak to somebody from some Silicon Valley to deliberate this. But sorry, I've gone into a different direction now. So yes, to connect mind to emotions. Emotional intelligence is my big thing. And the second book will be very much about emotional intelligence.
And we're looking forward to that. Third question is, what is your life's purpose?
First of all, there is no such thing as my life. There is just living the time. Living is basically the time we've been given. So what is the purpose of my time that I've been given? I only always have one answer, is the one that I am sure of, and that is that we were designed for growth, because the only other option is decline. So my purpose is to grow, and I believe we have the responsibility and the duty to share. Inevitably, we can't teach anybody anything, because only we ourselves can teach ourselves. So we can only share, propose to people, and they will take that information and they will either learn something or they won't. So my purpose is to grow and to share.
JosephRain.com is the website. info@josephrain.com is how you can get in touch with him. You can also go, of course, to richarddugan.com, where you can listen to this interview. And by the way, if you're listening to the radio broadcast, you're going to miss a lot if you do not go to the podcast and listen to the entire interview. As a matter of fact, I recommend that for every single interview that's up there on the podcast, going back 11 and a half years, almost 11 and a half years. Because some of these interviews, they go on for an hour and 10, 15, 20, 25 minutes, and who knows what you're going to hear. So please avail yourself of those podcasts. If you can support this radio broadcast, we would appreciate that. And I hope that you also will support Joseph Rain by going to josephrain.com. Get a copy of this book. I think you're going to enjoy it. I really do. If you're a seeker like me, I think you're going to have great fun with the information, the unfinished book about who we are, first steps to self-discovery. And once again, Joseph, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Richard. Thank you for your time. You've been really gracious.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love, Talal.